that maybe we will have a temporary pause in Gaza between Hamas and IDF. That temporary pause will provide an opportune moment for either Israel stroke America to launch a new attack on Iran, or it is perfectly possible that Iran will launch a first attack on Israel.
Good day. It's Steve Yang with Natural Resource Stocks. Today, I've got a special guest, one of the sharpest macro minds out there, Simon Hunt. Simon's a go-to voice for investors and forecasters navigating the ever-shifting geopolitical landscape. So, Simon, it's an honor to have you here.
Well, it's my honor to be on your show. Thank you.
Well, Simon, you are too kind. Simon, I wanted to talk to you about what's going on with the Middle East in particular to start. I know that tensions were kind of going crazy specifically between Israel and Iran. They looked like they could spiral out of control. Things seem to have quieted down since. From your view, what's really happening? Is this just a lull? Is something brewing beneath the surface, or is there a material shift here?
For the first question, that's a big one. I think what's interesting, before we get on to Israel itself and Iran, is the purported agreements between MBS of Saudi Arabia and President Trump. It all sounded wonderful. Just as when Trump met Xi, everything that came out of that meeting, according to the media, was great. A truce has been signed, and relationships are back on track. Well, for the Trump-Xi meeting, that's not true from the Chinese perspective. There is no truce regarding rare earths. What China might do is to allow rare earths to be exported for strictly industrial purposes and not for any military applications. And they'll track that very carefully. But following the very aggressive wordings from the new Japanese prime minister against China, and that those words came so soon after Trump had been in Tokyo, probably reflects what happened between the two leaders in their discussions. So China has taken this with an even greater aggressive attitude. And whatever might have materialized from the Xi-Trump meeting will not now materialize. And it's quite interesting that I have a technical associate, WaveTrack International, that I've worked with for 30 odd years. When they make a big call, I never ignore it, because ultimately it turns out to be normally to be correct. And his big call some months ago was a massive decline in the Hang Seng Index, which would overspill into China. And I couldn't understand it until we had this flare-up between China, America, and Japan. Because what it is implying is that we might have a more aggressive stance that China will take over Taiwan, and that's something that we could see, could well see, over the next few months, an escalation there, which would then obviously cause the Hang Seng and the Shanghai Composite indices to fall sharply. So I mentioned this because I fear that whilst everything sounded great between MBS and Trump and these wonderful agreements, the details have not yet been worked out. They haven't been signed. And are we going to actually see another damp squid? But it gave great photo opportunities for Trump. And then you have to ask the question, if some of these agreements, particularly the sale of chips and semiconductors to Saudi Arabia, what is going to be the reaction of China? Because China has big trade relationships with Saudi Arabia, and they sell their chips to Saudi Arabia. And what's happening at the moment is that China is announcing, it's made a series of announcements of a very significant upgrading in their semiconductor and chip production. So much so that Huawei is testing a new machine to produce 3nm chips, which will be in mass production next year. So I'm not sure, what I'm trying to say is I'm not sure how this supposedly improved relationships between Saudi and America will pan out. It's going to take a while for that to happen. But the one aspect that is for sure, when the discussion went on to Gaza, MBS made it very clear that before they get involved, there has to be an explicit agreement with Israel and America to a two-stage solution for Gaza and the Palestinian nation. And you get the sense in Israel that that is a no-starter. So my take is that domestically in Israel, that phases 2 and 3 of the Trump plan are simply going to go nowhere. That maybe we will have a temporary pause in Gaza between Hamas and IDF. That temporary pause will provide an opportune moment for either Israel stroke America to launch a new attack on Iran, or it is perfectly possible that Iran will launch a first attack on Israel. Why do I say that? Iran is the one obstacle to the creation of Greater Israel, which is Israel's current government's primary objective. For America, Iran is perceived to be the weak link in the BRICS group of nations. Kill off that weak link and the BRICS maybe won't survive, is the thinking. So I think that an attack on Iran or Iran on Israel is inevitable. Timing, I think, is more likely to be in the first half of next year. Though I will probably know a bit more about that in the next few days, call it the next week or so. So that's where we are on, as I see it, on the Middle East at the moment.
Simon, I've got several questions. Thank you for your thoughts on this. My mind's spinning. First of all, I noticed that I asked you about Middle East and you went directly to the tension in the East, particularly with China and Taiwan.
I had to do that in order to answer your question on the Middle East.
Yeah. So if you could, so two questions. One is the tension with over Taiwan over semiconductors, because my understanding is that Taiwan is where they manufacture the most advanced semiconductors. Sure. And then two, if you can slow down for me and maybe some of our listeners who aren't as in tune, what's the connection in particular, a specific connection? Why did you, if you can help me connect the dots between what's going on in China, Taiwan, and Saudi Arabia, and Iran and Israel just a little bit more so I can understand the connection, because it was very clear that it was intentional of an answer.
Yeah, what I was trying to say is that immediately after the Trump-Xi meetings, the media had, oh, this is triumphant Trump, and truce has been signed, and relations are better. Whereas in reality, that's not been the case. So what I'm trying to say is that everything seems wonderful post the Trump MBS meeting, but what is actually going to emerge from that?
Mm-hmm.
So does that answer that question?
Yeah.
And what was the other question?
So if you can help me connect the dots a little bit more. So the meeting, the Trump meeting is basically, the news is all good for photographs, but really what's underneath is not really going as well as it is being portrayed.
Nothing has been signed. It's when you get into the detail, the nitty-gritties, that obstacles can appear. And we're not in that stage yet. And if some of these agreements do materialize, what is going to be the reaction of China? China and Saudi Arabia have a very large trade relations. And China has been buying parcels of oil from Saudi Arabia with Chinese currency and not dollars.
Yeah.
That, and Saudi Arabia has had the facility of converting the CNY that it doesn't need into gold through the Shanghai Gold Exchange in Shanghai. But now the Shanghai Gold Exchange either has built or is nearly built a gold vault in Saudi Arabia, so that any Chinese currency that Saudi doesn't want to hold can be converted into gold in the Saudi Arabian SGE gold vault. And this is how the BRICS is going to secure their currency through gold by building other Shanghai Gold Exchange gold vaults in other BRICS member countries. And there is one now operating in Hong Kong.
Simon, about BRICS, I spoke with Dr. Keith Weiner about, or sorry, Dr. Keith Weiner about BRICS, and he didn't think their common dislike of the U.S. and the dollar was enough to hold them together long term. Do you see BRICS nations truly challenging the dollar? Could they gain real traction?
I'll put it this way. The dollar is within a few years is going to be a digital currency. Whether it's gold coins, Bitcoin, or whatever. But what is it backed by? Stable coins will be backed by a treasury bill, which is a debt instrument. What BRICS will develop, as I've just indicated, is a currency that's going to be secured by gold. If you're an independent country, which would you prefer? And they're not. The objective of BRICS is not to destroy the dollar, but to establish their own payment mechanism that operates without the dollar. Because if you operate with the dollar, Washington or America has control over you through the banking system. So what we are seeing, and I forget the numbers, but already a significant part of payments made within BRICS countries is being made in local currencies secured by gold. You can see it.
No involvement
between,
of the.
You can see it between Russia and China. Over 90%, probably over 95%, are in local, in their own currencies, with the surpluses that Russia holds being balanced by gold in a PBOC vault. You have it between Russia and India and India and China and so on and so forth. So it's not to destroy the dollar, but it's to create the BRICS' own payment system without using the dollar.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, on a related note, I saw that the Financial Times, the professor Steve Hanke, he was highlighted saying that the Trump administration in Washington was actively looking to push for more dollarization. And I think he went on to say that, it's basically that he sees more of a dollarization or a re or pro dollarization than the world being de-dollarized. You mentioned that the U.S. currency is going to be completely digital in a couple of years. I also hear you saying that the BRICS is providing an alternative payment system that doesn't involve the dollar.
Sure.
Do you see the world moving towards the dollar, away from it? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, America rather belatedly has woken up to the fact that Africa is going to be a big growth area, and that Africa contains a lot of the world's known and also undiscovered natural resources, particularly metals. So America is now, as I said, belatedly trying to push their influence into Africa through dollarization. We will give you loans at X below market prices, repayment terms, stretch, usual sorts of things. What BRICS has done through their bank, the New Development Bank, all loans now are in local currencies with repayment in local currencies, not the dollar. But what this is starting to create is a new battleground. And I would take the DRC as the primary battleground. As you know, the DRC is very rich in all sorts of minerals, from copper, cobalt, rare earths, et cetera, and gold. And a few months ago, there was an agreement signed between Washington and the president of the DRC that all future investments, American companies will have the first choice. Following that agreement, the DRC held a promotional conference in Washington to say what a wonderful place DRC is and how you can invest. A colleague of mine was recently in the DRC for a few months and confirmed that we are seeing the early signs of America trying to wrest control over mining investments in China away from in DRC away from China. So I think this is what's going to emerge across Africa over the next few years.
So the I read a book that was very influential just in terms of my thinking, in terms of understanding geopolitics. It had to do with the petrodollar and, you know, understanding and that and the dictator's dilemma. But basically, understanding a little bit more that, you know, people's motives are not pure, you know, and understanding that wars and tension has a lot to do with resources. And so if I'm hearing you in terms of the battleground, it looks like the U.S. is in battleground in a lot of different fronts. It seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, particularly with China, and it has a lot to do with the currency, as well as minerals, rare control of rare earths. And do you see the same thing playing out in like Venezuela? I mean, what's going on with Ukraine? If you love your thoughts on the Russian-Ukraine war, I know that we're jumping so many different things going on, like the Russian-Ukraine war, for instance. I mean, I'd love to know your perspective there. I mean, is the conflict settling, evolving, just getting overshadowed by other headlines?
The only time when the Russia's war with NATO over Ukraine, and I'm being very explicit there, can be resolved is if America satisfies the demands that Russia has made ever since June 2024. Their primary concern is their future security. So that means that NATO will have to pull back out of Ukraine completely and out of neighboring countries to Russia, where they have significant positions. The next thing is a complete revamp of the security architecture of all of Europe and Eurasia. These are the demands that Russia has been making regularly since June 24. So until there is that recognition in Washington and in the EU, then the war in one way or another will continue in Ukraine.
You mentioned NATO, and my understanding of NATO is that it's really America, masked as some organization. Basically, it's really America. what position does NATO have, and is NATO? Do you see it continuing to be a thing, or do you see that dissolving?
I think there's a high risk that NATO will dissolve when the war is finished in the Ukraine, because it will represent a defeat of NATO. If you go all the way back, some say as far back as 1949, when the intelligence agencies of the UK and America backed the hardliners in Ukraine, then in, when was it, 2012, orchestrated the Maidan Rebellion, then physically trained and armed a Ukrainian army of over 250,000 people. So a defeat, a Russian victory in Ukraine, is a NATO defeat. It's very simple terms. What is NATO trying to reposition itself as more of a global force, particularly an Asian force? You listen to the secretary, the new Secretary General of NATO, the ex-Prime Minister of Holland, that's what he's putting forward.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it will fly with Washington, but that's down the road. So the future of NATO hinges on what happens in Ukraine.
Do you see a world where, you know, what you consider a NATO defeat, but instead of it dissolving, evolving into something else? You mentioned Asia, and what would that potentially look like?
The Ukraine war will only stop when, as I said before, Washington agrees to Russian terms. Pure and simple.
Mm-hmm. And then NATO, you don't see that happening in the near future?
No. Most unlikely. I mean, even if there is another meeting between Trump and Putin,
mm-hmm.
lots of talk that it will be another meeting in Budapest. But people that I listen to say even that is unlikely. And even if there is a meeting, it'll just be talk with no real conclusion.
All right, so we got that still spinning. Just love your thoughts before I let you go, Simon. Love your thoughts on Venezuela. Love your thoughts on, if you can shed some light on what's going on in the ground on the global stage there.
Well, obviously, I mean, is regime change what Trump is after? Why does he want regime change? He wants control over Venezuela's energy assets, which are the biggest in the world. He wants to be able to transfer those assets onto the Treasury's balance sheet. His ultimate objective for America to retain its hegemonic status is control of global energy sources. So if he gets first Venezuela, you go further south, Argentina with their new shale assets, you go to Brazil with their oil assets, then of course he needs Iran. And if he gets Iran, then he will get all the Gulf countries and Saudi Arabia's oil assets under his control. That will only leave Russia, which has long been Washington's objective of dismembering Russia and breaking it up into smaller units in order to get control of their natural resources. That's the big picture. That's the big game. I don't think he's going to achieve it because he won't get victory over Iran. And if he doesn't get victory over Iran, he's not going to get the UAE and Saudi Arabia and the other Gulf countries. Voila.
So from what hearing you, it doesn't sound like the U.S. comes out on top for any of these fronts.
Personally, I don't see it. But it's not going to stop Washington from trying to achieve that objective.
Simon, if you can tell us about Simon Hunt Strategic Services, I know that's an abrupt transition, but I'd love to know what it is, if our listeners can understand the sort of reports you produce, what our listeners can expect to find there, and how they might benefit.
Thank you. We produce regular reports on the global macro scene, which includes credit markets, geopolitics, finance, everything that makes the world tick, and what's going to make it tick over the next, where are we, 25, five odd years. So essentially what we see is we have a mini market correction taking place now. We have a maxi one second quarter of next year, and then we have the mega crash in around 2028. So how we get there is what we write about. And where we can be connected is at simon@shss.com or else simon-hunt.com.
Simon, thank you for sharing your insights. For everyone listening, I'll make sure to include Simon's links for Strategic Services and his connections in the show notes. It's been a true honor, Simon.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
now it's time for my evening glass of wine.
After this, I might need something. I might need an afternoon wine, my friend. Well, just for our listeners, Simon is a true one of the most respected voices. So I know that they'll benefit. For everyone, I'm Steve Yang, learning alongside you from people like Simon, from people smarter than me. Stay smart, curious, and disciplined. Simon, thanks again. I'm a huge fan.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.